from KQED.
This is the California Report podcast. I'm Lily Jamali. After a 15-month investigation, CAL FIRE has concluded that PG&E is not responsible for the deadly, destructive wildfire that burned parts of Santa Rosa in October 2017. The Tubbs Fire killed 22 people and destroyed more than 5,000 homes. Here to help us understand what CAL FIRE's findings mean for fire survivors and ratepayers, KQED's Marisa Lagos joins me now in the studio. Hi, Marisa.
Hey, Lily.
Let's start with what PG&E is saying, because they had let federal regulators know that their intent was to enter bankruptcy protection on Tuesday. Does this finding change that?
All signs point to no. The utility did issue a statement where they sort of reiterated the broader liabilities they're facing. And everyone we've talked to, I think, sort of thinks that this is not going to change their game, although there's a lot of people who think that it should.
Well, among those, you can probably count wildfire victims, people who lost loved ones, people who lost property. Let's play a clip from Amanda Riddle. She's a lawyer who represents some of the 2017 fire survivors. And she says being cleared of blame in that CAL FIRE report does not take the lawsuits stemming from the Tubbs Fire off the table.
That still leaves claims arising from the question of why PG&E did not de-energize its electrical lines that were feeding that private conductor in the face of a known severe windstorm, and why PG&E didn't know that its power lines had been tapped into.
Yeah, and you know, Lily, this is what I heard from a lot of victims and their lawyers, which is just, we really have a lot of evidence that points us to still blaming PG&E, even if CAL FIRE believes that it started somewhere else. And I think that de-energization question is huge. And just more broadly, you know, they feel like the utility has not kept up its side of the bargain, and they're pointing to the broader picture as well.
Well, investors in PG&E certainly saw things very differently. We saw shares almost double in value. You at one point yesterday after this finding was released. What about ratepayers? Does this finding have any impact on them?
Well, maybe. I mean, it's hard to tell long term. You know, I think the thing with bankruptcy court is that everybody's going to be fighting over, you know, a smaller pie. That includes wildfire survivors, and certainly ratepayers are the ones that could get, you know, end up picking up the cost that PG&E can't cover. But that's going to be a long, long process that involves the bankruptcy court and the state regulators and potentially the legislature and governor.
All right. Marisa Lagos from KQED's political team. Good to have you here this morning. Thank you.
My pleasure, Lily.
I want to take you back now to last month, December 3rd, to be exact. It was a few weeks after the campfire in Butte County, the first day back for the legislative session in Sacramento, and there was chatter that lawmakers might try to tweak a recently signed law called SB 901. That's the one passed last year that allows utilities, including PG&E, to pass some of their wildfire liabilities from 2017 onto consumers. Here's the thing. It did not apply to 2018. The addition of those few words would have changed that so that campfire liabilities would be covered too, but it never happened. Instead, PG&E appears poised to enter into bankruptcy protection on January 29th. And for anyone who thought that that was a maneuver aimed at putting political pressure on Sacramento, well, the California Report has confirmed that legislation is at this point no longer in the works. Here's Assemblyman Chris Holden, the Democrat who chairs the Utilities Committee, who told me the change was on track in December.
It was, and we were considering it. We were looking at accountability measures to go along with it, and PG&E then decided that they would get a more favorable outcome through the courts than through the legislature. I assume that was their calculus, and as a result of that, the playing field had shifted from a legislative solution to the courts.
For more detail on what happened, I also spoke with Assemblyman Jim Patterson, a Republican who is the vice chair, Holden's counterpart on the Utilities Committee. In his office in Sacramento earlier this week, I asked him about sentiment among legislators towards PG&E.
I just don't think that there is an appetite here for writing billions of dollars of taxpayer money in some effort to keep PG&E from bankruptcy.
All eyes now are on Tuesday when PG&E has said it will enter into Chapter 11. In Sacramento, state Democrats have picked up one more seat in the state assembly, and that's without even holding an election. Listen to this. A moderate Republican switched parties on Thursday, drawing a rebuke from his now former party. KQED politics reporter Katie Orr reports from our Capitol Bureau.
San Diego Assemblyman Brian Mainshine wasn't sure he was going to make it back to the Assembly when he faced re-election this past November. A blue wave rolled over much of California and looked like it could take him down with it. But Mainshine held on and beat his Democratic challenger by just about 600 votes. Still, it may have been too close for comfort. Mainshine says he's now registered as a Democrat, though he insists it's not because of his narrow win.
The political calculations are for others to make. What I wanted to do was stand where my values are, where my positions are. I'm proud of the votes that I've taken. I've crossed the aisle many times. And it'll be nice to do that now and not hear criticism from my own caucus.
Mainshine's former caucus did not take the news well. Assembly Republican leader Marie Waldron called him a turncoat who's more concerned with keeping a job than with political philosophy. The move means there are now just 19 Republicans in the Assembly and 61 Democrats. For the California Report, I'm Katie Orr in Sacramento.
Let's turn now to the story of a San Quentin inmate who was released from prison last week after almost 16 years behind bars. He's the inspiration for a new California law that went into effect on January 1st. Part of the state's ongoing criminal justice reform, it limits murder convictions to people who did the killing. Before SB 1437 passed, accomplices could get convicted of felony murder, too. KQED's Hope McKenney has more.
Did I ever expect to get out? That's a very hard question, because some people like to say that I'm a pessimist. I like to say I'm a realist. And what that meant for me was I have 25 years to life, and I have 25 years to do before I'm even eligible for a parole board. And so did I ever feel like I was going home? Honestly, like sometimes like the hope was there, but realistically, like it was too far for me to even think that if I was or not.
34-year-old Adnan Khan has spent nearly half of his life in prison for a murder he did not commit.
16 years ago, I participated and committed a robbery, and I was absolutely wrong for that. Unfortunately, the man that I was with stabbed and killed the young man, and my intentions were not to kill anyone.
Under California's felony murder rule at the time, Khan was held equally responsible for the killing of the marijuana dealer they were robbing. So he was convicted of felony murder and got a sentence of 25 years to life. The bipartisan bill, co-authored by State Senator Nancy Skinner, a Democrat, and Assemblymember Joel Anderson, a Republican, went into effect on January 1st. Khan's murder conviction was overturned on January 18th.
With this new legislation change, the law says that I am not responsible for the murder. Though the law has changed, I still do take responsibility for it. And I have since day one.
While he was in prison, Khan got involved in criminal justice reform work. He co-founded an organization called Restore Justice, which helped sponsor SB 1437. He also worked on a video project that tells the stories of inmates in San Quentin. He plans to continue this work.
And so for me being out now, I want to pursue that and continue that from my side and start telling stories about formerly incarcerated people. Because a lot of laws and sentencing reform and criminal justice reform is based around that, telling stories, you know.
Because of the new legislation, now as many as 800 inmates with murder convictions may be eligible for reduced sentences in California. For the California Report, I'm Hope McKenney.
Several law enforcement and victims advocacy groups say the new law could allow people who committed crimes to be released without taking responsibility for their actions. Thanks for listening to the California Report podcast for this Friday, January 25th. We're a production of KQED Public Radio. Our engineers are Danny Bringer, Katie McMurrin, Rob Spate, Jim Bennett, and Seal Muller. I'm Lily Jamali. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Support for the California Report comes from the California Healthcare Foundation, helping low-income Californians get the health care they need, on the web at chcf.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems.